It will surprise almost no one, especially living in our region, to hear that minimum wage is generally not enough money for one person to be able to rent a decent place to live. In fact, the report that shows how unaffordable housing is in much of the country is called Out of Reach. It's an annual report from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, so we're talking about Out of Reach 2017 this time around. We have perspectives from and about the report from two sources. Diane Yentel is the president and CEO of the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. Hi, Diane.
Hi, good morning.
And thank you for joining us today. Todd Crabtree is with us as well to give a regional perspective. He's with the Housing Authority in Mendocino County. Hi, Todd. Good to have you here. Diane, tell us a little bit about the National Low-Income Housing Coalition and what it's set up to do.
Sure, glad to. Thanks for the opportunity. So the National Low-Income Housing Coalition is a national membership organization dedicated to achieving socially just public policy that assures that the lowest income people have decent, safe, and affordable homes. So we do our work through research, organizing, advocacy, and policy advancement, and all of the policy solutions that we pursue are grounded in data and in research.
How long then have you been putting out the Out of Reach report?
This is the 28th year that we've put out of Reach. And as you said, it's an annual publication that really highlights the mismatch between the wages that people earn and the price of decent rental housing in every state, metro area, and counting in the United States.
That implies there's been a mismatch all along. I just wonder if it is historically biggest now or if it's been bigger than this.
It's been growing for sure, and I think the rental crisis itself and its impact on the lowest income people has reached historic heights.
All right, so give us a one-line bottom line. What's the most important figure to you as you look at, because there are several different sets of findings in the report?
Well, the bottom line is that nowhere in America can minimum wage full-time workers earn enough to afford a decent two-bedroom apartment. And in only 12 counties throughout the entire country can that same minimum wage worker afford a one-bedroom apartment. But it's also important, I think, to recognize that the affordability of rental housing is a challenge not just for minimum wage workers. The two-bedroom housing wage nationally is about $5 greater than the average hourly wage for renters across the country. And that's true in every state across the country as well. So it's not just the minimum wage workers who are struggling. It's average renters who are as well.
Wow. So that figure, basically $5 over what you're making now gets you into a house, a two-bedroom house.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, Todd, California, I noticed on the work from the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, shows California, not surprisingly, the most expensive state on the U.S. mainland, requiring an hourly wage of $30.92 for a two-bedroom rental home, and that's at 30% of income. Mendocino is not that urban, but what kind of a situation do you have there in general?
Yeah, I would say that's basically what we're looking at. Our problem here is just a complete lack of housing for anybody who wants to rent. We find there's not a whole lot of construction going on. The Bay Area has seen rent increases in the past years, sometimes as high as 50%. And, it's like you really can't find a place to live if you actually do even make a decent income.
I was going to ask you how much the Bay Area affects you. I mean, you're not technically, I guess, part of that metropolitan statistical area, but you border it or are close to it. So does that have an effect on rents in Mendocino?
Not as much as, Sonoma County, if you know California is probably the farthest north of the Bay Area, so we get a little bit of a delayed effect, but not nearly as big. I know in Cloverdale, which is in Sonoma County, a two-bedroom is going to be more than $3,500 a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a two-bedroom
house. Talking San Francisco, you could easily be talking $5,000 for a studio for a month.
So in Mendocino County, particularly where you're working, is our affordability issues exist all over the county, or are there some pockets that might still be somewhat affordable?
Well, yeah, it's all over the county because we just don't have the housing. We have a vacancy rate of between 2.5% and 3%. We have a lot of government positions and school positions that can't be filled because people accept the job but they can't find housing here.
Really? So they accept the job, can't find housing, then decline?
Right. So they end up taking a job somewhere else.
Wow. So what kinds of programs are in place through the various housing offices in Mendocino County to try to help low-income renters or to provide more housing or both?
Well, for low-income renters, we have the typical Section 8 program. I think you're familiar with that in Oregon, mm-hmm. Also known as Housing Choice Voucher Program. We have permanent supportive housing, which is for people who are homeless or at risk of being homeless. We have a Veterans Assistance Housing Program, and we have first-time homebuyer programs for people to try and buy homes. But the main thing I think in California that I've seen is when there was a dissolution of redevelopment agencies, I don't know if you had anything similar in Oregon, but that actually had, those were tax districts that had a set aside for low to moderate housing construction. When that went away, there hasn't been anything in its place, and so we're just not seeing new housing construction happening.
That was something that Jerry Brown set up to help reduce the shortfall in the state budget, wasn't it?
Well, it was something that went back years. He did dissolve all the redevelopment agencies. They basically fought with Jerry Brown over whether or not he could take money from them for school funding. They pushed it. He won. And I don't think anybody really realized that the byproduct of that would be the lack of funding for affordable construction.
Okay. So that's the picture in Mendocino County in California a little more broadly. So Diane Yandel, as you listen to what has been going on in California, it seems like the kinds of offerings are pretty typical place to place, Section 8 in particular. Is the focus then more often on trying to provide more supply of housing or to help the demand for housing? I mean, how is this generally being addressed?
Yeah, it's a combination. It depends on the community, whether it's the supply or the demand that's most in need. I mean, I'd say nationally, really in every community, and especially in places like California, a lack of supply of rental housing at any income level is adding to the really severe demand and the very low vacancy rates that we just heard about. That's, leading to increasing rents that are being felt across the income spectrum. But I think it's important to recognize a couple things. One is that some of the programs that you just heard about, the public housing program, the Section 8 voucher program, these are proven solutions to increase housing affordability for the lowest income people, to end homelessness, to end housing poverty. The problem is that we are not funding these solutions at the scale necessary to meet the need. So we have a housing system today where just one in every four households that are in need of housing assistance and eligible for it that get any help at all. So 75% of the people who need housing assistance don't get any help, and instead they have to get added to years and sometimes decades-long waiting lists for these programs. And the bottom line is that while we must increase supply of rental housing across the income spectrum in order to release some of the demand, right, to lower some of the rental costs overall, the private market will never meet the need for housing affordability for the lowest income people. And that's because you simply cannot build and operate housing and be able to make a profit when you're housing some of the lowest income people in the country. And that's where the federal government comes in. And that's where we need an increased investment in both the supply of homes, rental homes affordable to those lowest income people, and rental assistance programs that help people that are already in homes to be able to afford the rents there.
Right. So the market alone, as you're saying, will not take care of it.
It won't. Not for the lowest income people, no.
We're talking about housing costs in America for renters. The Out of Reach 2017 report is an annual product of, well, obviously this is this year's version of what has been an annual product from the National Low Income Housing Coalition, where Diane Yandel is the president and CEO. We're also talking to Todd Crabtree at the Mendocino Housing Authority. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Maybe you have some stories to share with us about looking for rental housing at a reasonable level, or what's reasonable for your income and what your situation has been. 800-838-3760 to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Diane, are there any innovations that you're tracking that show promise for either making a dent in high rents or at least for making more units available?
Well, there's a new program called the National Housing Trust Fund Program. It was created in 2008. It's the first new federal funding resource dedicated specifically to meet this need to create rental homes or preserve rental homes affordable to the lowest income people. It just last year received its first funding allocation. The money went out to the states. States are starting now to get their final allocation plans back from HUD and put that money to use building homes, rental homes affordable to lowest income people. HUD just announced last week the second allocation of funding. It's $220 million about nationally going to build and preserve rental homes. So it's a critical new resource for states to use to start to meet this need. But at the funding level it is now, it's really inadequate. So we have to look for ways to increase that investment, increase the money going to the states to be able to meet this need.
Is there any sort of match required from the states, or is it just $220 million in grant form?
It's mostly in grant form. It goes to the states by a formula based on basically how many of the lowest income people are severely cost burdened and how great of a need there is in those communities. And then the states, as it's a block grant, so the states are able to, within some parameters, be able to put those dollars to the best use to meet the highest needs in their communities, whether it's people who are formerly homeless, whether it's people who are returning to their communities after incarceration, whether it's people surviving domestic violence. That's up to the local communities to decide.
Just in general, is the issue now, and obviously increasing for years, that rents are going up or that wages are not?
It's a little of both. Mm-hmm. It's a little of both. I mean, and also I would say another factor has been that the federal investments in some of the solutions has been declining. So if you go back to the foreclosure crisis of 2007, 2008, since that time, the affordable housing crisis has intensified, and that's because you had millions of former homeowners entering the rental market and increasing demand. And at the same time, you had the millennial population, you know, a huge proportion of the overall population that was delaying homeownership longer than previous generations and remaining in the rental housing market. And you have baby boomers who are downsizing and re-entering the rental housing market. So all of this really significantly increased the demand. And during that same period of time, wages for the lowest income people were stagnating and even in real terms declining. And then at the same time, the federal government enacted very tight spending caps. This was back in 2010, that has led to a decline in federal spending in the housing programs that serve the lowest income people. So it's really been a mix of all of these situations that have created this crisis we have today.
And as far as the millennial generation goes, the younger people, I would have think there'd be a certain amount of pent-up demand here as well, because they were staying with parents for years, and then as their situation has improved, as the job market has improved, they're now able to go out and get their own places.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see some more of that, although, you know, one of the biggest factors I think that has led to a lot of the millennials not buying homes has been kind of crushing student loan debt. And that's something that continues to increase that has not been alleviated.
We're talking about housing costs and how out of whack they are in relation to income, particularly when you're on minimum wage in America. This is the focus of the Out of Reach 2017 report from the National Low Income Housing Coalition. That's where Diane Yentel is the president and CEO. We also have Todd Crabtree from the Mendocino Housing Authority on the line to help give some local perspective. And you can add to that perspective as well. Let's get some stories from you about situations you might have run across in trying to find rental housing and how that compares to the wages you make. 800-838-37 60 to join by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I want to be clear about one part of the Out of Reach 2017 report. When you're talking about measuring rents against the minimum wage, Diane, is it the federal minimum or what's in effect in that particular state?
It's what's in effect in that particular state. Yeah, so for California, of course, the minimum wage is a little over $10 an hour. And even at that minimum wage, a minimum wage worker would have to work 92 hours a week just to rent a one-bedroom apartment, and they'd have to work 118 hours a week to be able to rent a two-bedroom apartment. That's at the California minimum wage.
All right, so as I look at the map by county, this is 2017 hours at minimum wage needed to afford a one-bedroom rental home by county or metro area. I see three counties in Oregon. I think you mentioned just a dozen across the entire country where you can work for 40 hours a week or fewer and be able to afford rental housing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. At the one-bedroom level, there's only 12 counties in the country where a minimum wage worker could rent that one-bedroom. And there's no place in the country where a minimum wage worker could rent a two-bedroom apartment.
Wow. So as we look at the one-bedroom part, those counties in Oregon, the only one in our part of the state actually is Lake County, east of Klamath County, and that's it, you know, the southern part of the state. Nothing in California, no county in California. So Todd, tell us about some recent discussions of homelessness in Mendocino County and some approaches to take. Can you give us an outline?
Yeah, well, homelessness is actually a big issue here in Mendocino County. We are either first or second per capita in the nation for homeless, depending on which study you look at. It's either us or Detroit. We're at 140 per 10,000, where I think the state average is 30 per 10,000. So we're trying to figure out why we're so much higher. Our neighbor, Lake County, I think is around 60 per 10,000. I think San Francisco is only about 40 or 50 per 10,000. So we don't know if it's been the marijuana trade has encouraged people to come and relocate here, and then they can't find a job after trimming season. But that's been actually a big issue. We're starting to look at tiny houses as one way to address limited space and lower construction costs.
So I was going to ask about the fact you can't build a whole bunch of houses in a hurry, but tiny houses you can build fairly quickly.
Yeah, I mean, the issue, I don't know if you guys are doing those up in Oregon or not.
Yes.
The issue has been addressing the code issues for a tiny house.
Right. Right, yeah. And in fact, can you locate them here? No. How about over there? Well,
right.
Maybe, So Medford had to bump around about three times before it found a home for its tiny house community.
Exactly, and that's where we're at right now. So I think we just found a location. I think we're going to try to find a place about maybe 15 houses just to start.
All right, let's take some calls here. We have Connie and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about housing costs with Todd Crabtree and Diane Yentel.
Hi, good morning. I'm in Eugene, University of Oregon City, so my situation might be somewhat different. But one of the things that's happened over the last 10 to 20 years is that the housing that was built before World War II, some of it was owned by private people who had been renting it for a long period of time, and for lack of a better word, it was ghetto housing or very low-income, poorly maintained housing, but it was one of the ways in which a very poor person could find housing. Granted, it was not good. And so as these landlords have passed away, it seems, at least here, that we had almost all of that housing get torn down and be replaced by much more expensive, although, of course, in code, et cetera, housing. And so this entry housing, which was funky, was displaced by higher-end housing, and I wondered if that is happening elsewhere. Thanks.
Oh, yeah, sure, gentrification and all that sort of thing. Thanks for that, Connie. Diane, what do you have to offer about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a problem that's happening across the country in some communities more than others. I think it speaks, again, to the importance of programs that ensure that there are housing solutions across the income spectrum, right, for whether it's that lowest income minimum wage or senior on a fixed income renter to have housing that they can afford, or a first-time home buyer. Now, for that part of the issue in the population, it's a different set of solutions, right? And there are not necessarily federal resources needed to make that happen. As you were just saying really well, I think there are a lot of communities where they have kind of what we call naturally occurring affordable housing, right, for a particular segment of the population, where just ensuring that there are local zoning requirements that enable the creation of homes affordable to them can be enough and make sure that we have that housing that's available to that income sector. But again, for the lowest income people, additional resources are needed, and some of the programs that exist need to really be, the investments in them need to be increased to make sure that we have that housing affordable to them as well.
I have to wonder, Diane, is there some sort of a natural limit? I mean, at some point you get past the ability of people to pay, and obviously in the case of somebody already homeless, that limit is behind them, but at some point does the market price itself out?
Well, I mean, what we're seeing today, as you're saying, is that, as you said, we have homelessness, right? People literally sleeping on the streets or in shelters. And in some communities, unfortunately, that's increasing in the last year or two because the housing crisis has become so extreme. We also have a historic number of renters that are paying more than half of their income towards their rent, over 11 million renters across the country, paying one paycheck a month just to have that roof over their head, right? And about over 8 million of them are what we call extremely low income. So they are seniors, they're people with disabilities on fixed incomes, or they're people working really low-wage jobs, and they don't earn enough to be able to keep that up for long. So when you're paying more than half of your income towards your rent each month, and you're pretty low income to begin with, you know, you're just one emergency, one unexpected expense away from not being able to pay the rent, and then you're at risk of eviction and potentially eventual homelessness.
Let's take another call. Here's Lauren in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking housing with Diane Yentel and Todd Crabtree.
Hi there. I started making notes because I am have been in and out of this situation in California and now looking a little bit in the Ashland area. One thing is there is not only are rents so unaffordable, you know, $1,000 a month for a studio in Ashland or more. In places like Sacramento that were known for being affordable in the past 3 years, not only is it so unaffordable, going up on an average 10% a month, but I've seen places that rented a year ago for $1,000. They're available now a year later and they're $1,200. There's no availability, and where most people advertise is on Craigslist, and it's like a gauntlet because people can post whenever they want, so you have to be checking Craigslist constantly, calling, trying to be the first one in. It just seems so, so impossible. And then another thing that your guests haven't really touched on, but people who are working who got a no-fault eviction because the building was being sold or the landlord wanted to put a family member in or do a few repairs and raise the rent a lot. So they had to leave where they were, and they're living temporarily in motels, but temporarily can turn into a year of paying a lot. And then just one more point is that when you actually go look for a place, you pretty much have to decide at that moment if you're first in line for an application if you want it, because if you don't, there's someone behind you and someone behind them. And if you're an older renter like me and you live really quiet and you're a longtime non-smoker and you don't have a lot of guests and you don't have parties at home, you can't even figure out if a place is going to be quiet enough for you. So that's the situation right now.
Okay, a good personal story to end on. Thank you for that, Lauren and Ashland. And I want to thank Diane Yentel and the folks at the National Low Income Housing Coalition for providing the report. It is called Out of Reach 2017. It's available in full online. Todd Crabtree at the Mendocino Housing Authority, thank you, too, for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.